Hey gang, Kevin Strange here.
It's Jeremy Daniels.
And we just want to tell you that for the month of March over at Patreon, we got Jorek and the Shog of Steel in full, commercial free, ready to be heard, the audiobook. And a little later in the month, we'll have Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik also available to listen to before they air on the Reading to Strangers podcast. There's also discounts for books. My new book, I Died in a Bed of Roses, just came out, and you can get a pre-order discount on that book if you sign up for Patreon.
So if you're getting a Kevin Strange book, you might as well do the $5 of Patreon, because you get the book for about the same price and all this additional content as well.
Plus, you get your name in the dedication page as a special shout out to patrons in the book itself, and much more.
Yeah. Hey Kevin, what do you want to do about this podcast intro
for Reading to Strangers?
Yeah,
I was thinking we download this broody ass music, then you'd be like, Read to Strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. I'd be like, Read to Strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. Then I shoot myself in the head.
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song,
like with LeVar Burton.
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit.
Yeah, but like, Reading to Strangers.
Reading to Strangers. Reading to Strangers. No, that's a terrible idea.
And we're back.
Whoa.
What's up, Jeremy?
What is happening?
Fucking episode 13. We're getting dangerously close to that 20.
Yeah. I guess.
Well, I just want
to. We have to at least get past that.
Want to at least get past what we did with the Reading Monsters. And taking all of the podcasts together, this is actually the 32nd podcast. So.
A lot of special episodes.
A couple other podcasts. The whole time at the con, I was saying we did two podcasts. You're like, motherfucker, you do three podcasts. Oh, yeah. Well, it's been a week.
God house.
Since the show. Since Horror Hound Weekend Cincinnati 2017. We did a little pregame. We did a little during the game last week.
Yeah.
And this week we...
We had
a little time to think about it. I apologize, gang, if I sound like a piece of shit. It's because I am. I got the con crud.
I told you how to fix that. Come and play with poop with me and...
And I knew Jeremy wouldn't get sick because he has a very, very strong immune system. I used to have a badass immune system from being on the road so much, but I've been off the road for so fucking long. All that handshaking and signing autographs and drinking after people, it just fucking got me this week, gang. And I've been down for the count. I mean, I haven't written anything. I haven't done anything. I've just been laying around like a piece of fucking shit all fucking week. It got me hard. Got me bad. So you're going to hear me cough and fucking sniffle throughout this whole thing. I apologize for that. So what's up? What's new?
Not much. Back to work and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. I hate coming back to real life after a con.
Yeah.
I want to
come back from vacation.
I want to live that road life all the time.
You need a lot more Patreon.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a lot more books.
Yeah. So we had a big question. Going into last weekend, going into the convention, would the full-time Facebook drama club writing community nonsense filter over into real life? Would it filter over into the convention scene? Would our fans on the road that we've been, you know, selling books to for a decade, movies and books for a decade, would they turn our backs on us? Would they abandon us? Because we don't toe the PC social justice liberal line, because we got into a big fight with Brian Keene and the Bizarros, would they ghost us? Well, what happened here?
Spoiler alert: not a damn thing.
Not even a...
Didn't have that. There was one couple that previously we interacted with that I was kind of worried about. You know who I'm talking to. And they welcomed you with open arms.
Everybody did, right?
Yeah, I mean, but that was the only one that I was, like, even kind of worried about. That I was like, okay, maybe they heard. Because they, you know, they got that vibe of being a little bit of social justice warriors. And
well, here's the thing, is a lot of those people are liberal. But a lot of those people are conservative. A lot of those people are non-political at all. Mm-hmm. A lot of those people don't give a shit. We all come together as a family. And when you have a family reunion... not everybody gets along ideologically, but when you get together, you have to get along with each other. And we are, and this goes for the fans as well as the other vendors and celebrities, is we're all out there together. And we have to get along, and we have to be friendly. And people weren't just, like, courteous. They were loving, as always, as though nothing, they don't give a fuck about internet drama. They don't, that nobody even brought it up.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
One guy, I was wasted on Saturday night, you weren't with me, walked up to me, he was wasted too, and he told me, listen, brother, it takes some fucking balls to call out your own writing community like that. That's how fucking legends are made. And I was like, well, I'm not trying to be a legend, I'm just trying to do the right thing. I didn't want to fucking keep my fucking mouth shut anymore about hypocritical bullshit. You know what I mean? I had to say what the honest truth. And I don't care. I told you when it was happening. I told you guys when it was happening. I didn't care what happened to me. I wasn't trying to become a legend. I was just telling the truth. I was just being honest. My frustrations had reached a point where when you feel like a whole writing community that lacks integrity, and you don't want to be a part of it anymore, you have two options. Go away quietly or smack them in the fucking face and call them hypocrites. And I just decided to smack them in the face and call them hypocrites because I'm not a fucking coward and I'm not a fucking pussy. And when we went on the road, I was totally ready for whatever. You and me both, right?
Yep.
Ready for what the fuck ever. And what happened?
Like going to the family reunion after you missed a couple of them. Everybody was just glad to see you, wonder where you've been.
Not only that, but the actual fan presence, the Strange Fiction fan presence, was more than it usually is.
Oh, yeah. Man.
We had more fans hanging out at the table this con than most cons.
Than anyone I've ever been to.
Right? Because we have most, you know, sometimes we have four or five people ourselves, so the table's crowded with even one or two fans. It was just you and me.
Yeah.
And at times, the table was completely crowded with fans.
Yeah.
We actually had to put fans behind the table.
Yeah,
and you and me stood in front of the table just to keep the pathway clear so we could sell books and have the fans be able to hang out and spend time with us.
Yeah.
Right? But even if that hadn't happened, even if we would have been completely ghosted, even if we would have fucking lost our ass on that trip, the difference between real motherfuckers and fucking the Poser Patrol is the Poser Patrol would have fucking packed up their books on Saturday and fucking ran off with their tail between their legs and never done another con for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. We have too much fun bullshit with it.
When you're a real motherfucker, I would have taken it as a fucking challenge.
Yeah.
If we would have gone out there and they would have said, no, you know, you're not fucking welcome here, I would have said, you know what? Fucking stop me. I'll do twice as many cons next year, motherfuckers, and I'll win every one of these motherfucking fans back.
Yeah. There's a lot of personality types that did get drunk on Saturday because they were sad rather than I was just having a good time. I mean, we were having a great time behind the table, in front of the table.
That's another one of the things I wanted to talk about. They sort of put us, like, I wasn't really happy with the fact, and there's a lot of comedy surrounding that fucking door.
Yeah.
that they put us in front of. But
I don't even know what that dude's name
is. I know.
Apparently he was famous. He hammered the shit out of me with that door and didn't even act like fucking anything was going on.
I want to get to that in a minute, though. I don't want to talk about that right now. I'll never forget the look on your fucking face. All I heard was, and I turn around, and you're ready to fucking throw bows, dude. And it's one of those fucking celebrities. I don't remember who he was either. He was one of those motherfuckers from Monster Squad.
I don't know if it was the guy from Monster Squad. I don't remember him being. I know it wasn't the guys facing us. I know it wasn't. I know it wasn't Jason. What, 2-4 or whatever he was.
Yeah.
Kane Hodder's brother.
CJ, whatever his name is.
Yeah, I can't think of that. But it wasn't the guy that was...
CJ Graham?
CJ Graham. Yeah. But yeah, man.
But that's not where it ended. This dude slams his fucking door. I didn't want to talk about this yet. We get set up. We buy wall space. And wall space is extra. We buy wall space with a fucking outlet. Because I think we're going to have strippers hanging out at the table all weekend, so I wanted an outlet so that all the strippers could charge their fucking phones so they could fucking Snapchat and shit, right? I'm trying to yeah. fucking create a homely environment for the ladies. And we get there, and we got a fucking door and no outlet.
Yeah.
And we're in the corner facing the back wall, like completely cut off from the traffic.
The worst spot to be in.
I don't think there is a worse spot.
No,
really.
There wasn't.
The floor of that con, I don't think there was a worse corner. Like, there was no other spot on that con that faced away from the crowd.
Yeah, that you actually had to look behind your shoulder. Oh, shit, somebody's selling books.
But, so that door ended up being the busy door. Not only was it a door, and we, like, went up to the guy when we were setting up. We were like, so you gave me wall space with the door, you know? Is the door going to be open or shut? Because we got a backdrop.
Shut the whole time.
Oh, it'll be shut the whole time. All right. How about I build the backdrop so the door can open just in case? Oh, it's probably a good idea. Probably a good idea indeed, sir.
You know how many times that backdrop would have come crashing down on us if we didn't fucking build it?
We move our table, what?
Just for the back of the...
Just so the backdrop could be, in, like, so the door could clear and go all the way to the wall.
Yeah.
If somebody kicked it open, which it turns out they did often, because that ended up being the busy door. That ended up being the door they would whisk the fucking celebrities in and out of. That's where they took the celebrities out of at the end of the day.
Fucking everybody from Horror Hound was going in and out.
Yeah, all
that
the
door.
Horror Hound volunteers in and out, in and out, in and out. And for three full days, every single time that door swung open, the motherfucker that has already been through that door 50 times... acts like they didn't realize there was a... like they walked through surprise. Motherfucker, how many times have you owed me?
Well, the same guy that smacked me with the door.
Right, that's what I'm getting at. Not only did this motherfucker knock the door open on Jeremy and fucking bash into this, I'm talking a violent interaction. I was off doing something else, and I come back, and Jeremy saw that motherfucker did it again.
He was coming back through the door and hit me. I was sitting in the chair. If I wasn't sitting where I was sitting, he would have hit the background trying to go for that door.
He came around that corner with a 90-degree angle, trying to fucking cut that corner as fast as he could. Boom! Into Jeremy again.
God damn you. Motherfucker. Don't even say you're sorry, apologize, or anything.
I'm going to get on this website real quick and figure out who that motherfucker is.
But yeah, I mean, the door was a constant treat.
But we manned it up. We manned it up right away. Because I could just tell by the way that motherfucker was talking. Like, oh, this will be shut all weekend. Oh, will it, motherfucker?
Well, I mean, it did help pull us a little bit away so you could see at least the table from walking down the main aisle, so... You know, it was a blessing and a curse at the same time. I mean, we did get to see every celebrity. Every celebrity got to walk by us. I mean, is it Tom Noonan or Newlin? Is it Noonan or Newlin?
I don't know.
Guy from Last Action Hero, the Frankenstein. Big guy with a beard, I mean.
Yeah.
We were bullshitting all the time because he was just walking by.
I'm looking right now while Jeremy's talking. I'm trying to figure out who this motherfucker was that fucking shoulder fucking checked this motherfucker. Like, see, geez. I was thinking it was Duncan Rear, the guy that played Dracula, but it's not. It's this motherfucker right here. It's Stephen Matt.
Stephen Matt.
That's it, isn't it?
Let me see. I'm looking.
Scroll down. It's right after... it's about six or seven rows down. On the celebrities.
Stephen Mack.
So you got CJ Graham, Kane.
It was fucking Stephen Mack, that cocksucker.
It was that motherfucker. He was from Monster Squad. That's the dad. That's the cop dad.
Graveyard Shift.
Fucking shoulder blocked your ass.
Transfers 3 through 5. And the motherfucker damn near knocked me out and didn't say sorry.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But yeah,
I was on a nice rant before we went into the door incident. We're talking about how we were in the worst spot. Oh, I remember what I was going to talk about. You said we were having a good time at the table, and I was going to say that they even though we got the door and got faced away from the crowd, they sort of set us up where like on the end cap, there was an author.
Yeah.
And then as you came around the corner, there was Angie, the horror decor librarian.
Yes.
That was, but all that stuff was, all that stuff was literary. Like, yeah, all the pillows and everything, they were all quotes from books and TV shows and stuff. So I can see why they put her there, too. Then it was Strange Fiction, and then as you rounded the fucking corner, I don't know, they put a video game dude in the fucking...
Junk peddler is what I
was saying. Yeah, they put a junk peddler that was sort of broke the chain, but then they had another couple of authors.
Yeah.
And so it was sort of the book nook. I understand what they were trying to put together there.
Yeah.
But the same thing happens year after year, show after fucking show. Jeremy, without fail, when you get put by authors, those motherfuckers sit still like they've got a stick up their ass. And this is no disrespect to those authors. They, I went and talked to them. Nice guys.
Yeah, they're nice guys, but they weren't trying to pull
authors. These authors just sit at this. Is no disrespect to any authors that go to shows, but you guys sit at your tables like you're in church.
Gotta hustle.
And you don't do anything. And we make a, we create a fucking party, whether we like it or not. I mean, Jeremy and I didn't talk about anything, right?
No.
I just pulled a little fucking speaker out, put on the Iron Maiden, and insanity fucking ensued. People kept coming over with tequila shots, fucking American honey. Jeremy's got his fucking, what was it that you brought?
Regal Apple, Crown Royal.
Crown Royal Apple, fucking, we just, I mean, and it just turns into a fucking party atmosphere at the Strange Books fucking table, the Strange Fiction table, because that's just who we are. That's how we are. We're fucking traveling barbarians. This is what we fucking do. And I just, it doesn't matter what type of show we're at. This happens every time. Like, people that want to party gravitate towards us. And I feel like if I would have spent more time trying to get to know Angie and John, we could have got them to do shots with us, too, because they turned out to be pretty cool motherfuckers.
Yeah, they're drinking beer all day, so.
Yeah, they turned out to be pretty cool motherfuckers, so I think we could have fucking, like, turned the whole thing.
Well, I mean, we kind of got a little on edge, because she was like, I'm a librarian, first thing.
And I'm always like, oh, my goodness. Because I know what's going to happen.
We got to behave.
I know what's going to happen by Saturday noon, no matter how many times I say, what did I say to you before the show started?
Oh, you were talking about, oh, I'm going to be the one pass out drunk. I'm going to be the one pass out.
Before we even left for the show, what did I say?
Oh, I'm not drinking.
Jeremy, I've sliced up apples.
Yeah.
I've sliced up apples and oranges. Water, I'm here. Not going to be drinking this weekend, just so you know. Who's hammered at noon on Saturday? This motherfucker, that's who. Because the fans come over and they fucking drop fucking drinks in my fucking lap.
Well, I know that one guy from, what is it, Sinister Creations or something like that? What is the guy that made Incredible Hulk Spawn figures?
Yeah, the, I can't think of the, Mindbender, Mindbender Customs.
Yeah, there you go. And I looked over and I saw you doing a Don Julio shot. I was like, oh.
He came over with Don Julio, motherfucker. He's like, half of this is for you, man. I had to blow my nose down for a second.
So, yeah, and then Strange was getting shitty drunk. So, yeah, it was a pretty fun time. I mean, we both kind of got drunk Friday and a little bit Saturday. So much so that by the time it came Saturday night, I was a little gassed out. Had to just hang out and watch a little bit of Iron Fist in the hotel room, trying to recover.
You know what I ended up doing? I ended up finding fucking Timo and Shannon, and fucking guess what Shannon had? 130 proof fucking homemade hooch.
Yeah.
Fucking probably made
it. The Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, from the Wrecking Crew. Probably made it in his fucking bathtub, getting me fucking hammered. I didn't get back to the room on Saturday night, so what, 3:30?
Oh, I mean, that'd be later than that. It was almost quarter after three before I shut off Iron Fist. So
yeah, quarter to four, 4 a.m., and they weren't even ready to quit partying over there. And I was like, listen, man, I gotta fuck. Because we don't see each other. I don't think I've seen Shannon in 2 years.
Oh, I bet you haven't.
And Timo and I normally ride up together. So we get, you know, that's 6 hours of fucking yakking we didn't get to do. And this is a perfect segue for an announcement.
Oh.
There's going to be I don't know what to call it. I asked him if it had a name. He said no. He said he thought about naming it Doug. There's going to be a screening mini con, not a full-blown horror convention, but the dates are in place, the venue's in place, July 8th and 9th at Foo Bar in St. Louis, downtown St. Louis. John Dugan, grandpa from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, is going to be signing autographs, and there's going to be a screening of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and there will be vendors set up in the front bar. The back bar is a screening room, and we've screened movies there before also. So there'll be a screening of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and in the front bar, there's going to be vendors set up, including the Strange Fiction booth. We've been invited to vend at the mini... I don't know if you know if it's a mini con. I don't know what you call that. But it extends into the next day.
Doug. Where we'll just say Hot Dog until we get a real name.
It extends into the next day where there's a mini comic convention. Comic book show. So there's a screening of Texas Chainsaw Massacre on the 8th. And then a mini comic convention that will also include horror vendors on the 9th. So, and I'm not completely clear if it's at the same venue. Or if the comic convention portion of the show is at a different place. We're going to set up at Foo Bar one night and the next, you know, the other venue the next day. I don't know those details yet, but we don't ever, ever get horror cons in St. Louis. So it's really cool. John Dugan's a bad motherfucker. If you've never met him, he's a drinker. Wrecking Crew's going to be there.
Oh, the Wrecking Crew is going to be there.
Shannon and the Wrecking Crew are gonna come fucking throw down. So it's going to be a night of festivities for sure, and we get to be a part of that. So
awesome. It'll
be a ton of fun.
I should be fresh back from Jamaica.
Right. I think we have a which one is a July show? We've been talking
about CryptoCon.
We're talking about doing CryptoCon Kansas City. That's in July also, so it'll be right on the right on the heels of CryptoCon, and we'll be getting our little feetsies wet with another little mini con before we go.
I'm overbooked for that month.
What else you got?
I'm switching on call so I can go to CryptoCon, or trying to. The dude's a forgetful kind of guy.
Right.
So that means I'll come back from Jamaica from June till like July 3rd. I'll be in Jamaica. Come back from Jamaica for 4th of July. Work a couple of days. Do CryptoCon. Do the little convention.
Doug.
Yeah, do Doug. Do little Doug. And then the next week and have CryptoCon.
That's going to be a busy weekend. That's what the summer's for, right?
Yeah.
All right, so it's time for the finale of Jorak and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik. Gang, I hope that you've enjoyed what you've heard thus far. It's time to get real crazy. What do you think of the end of this story?
Oh, it's a great ending. You just don't see it coming.
I like to. I always tell people. I've told people for years. I'm a third act motherfucker. You think I've given you? You think I'm front loaded? You think I've given you all the excitement, all the twists? It's a twist. But I always save the best for last, gang. This third act is where it's at in Strange Fiction. Always stick it through to the end, and that's what we're gonna do right now. So, we'll see you on the other side.
Ew.
This is Jorak and the Swamp Phantoms of Ik.
Read by Kevin Strange. Kevin Strange.
Part 3. Here we go. What's up, you reader fucks? My name's Kevin Strange.
And this is Travis.
And we're here from the Watching with Strangers podcast, because there's other things in the world besides books, too, you bookish fucks. We review cult movies. What kind of cult movies do we review, Travis?
All kinds of cult movies.
Like what?
Cultists of the cult, including Cult from the Future.
Cult movies from the future at kevinthestrange.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever other podcasts fuck, you fucks. Kill them all, or die a great death trying, Jorak screamed, lunging at the nearest frog thing. He easily parried its tongue blade attack and sliced the appendage in half, causing the creature to shriek in pain as green fluid gushed out, covering Jorak's pale locks as he recovered his stance and ran the frog thing through, silencing its protests. Trina and Nirod ran forward, each deflecting a tongue weapon with ease. Trina dove down and slid feet first between the legs of the nearest frog thing, raising her circular swords above her as she did, gutting the sexless amphibian.
It emptied its guts directly on top of her, causing Nirod to laugh out loud as he snatched up the tongue of his attacker and used his unnatural strength to rip it directly from its root in the frog creature's mouth before he used it to bash its owner's wide head in, sending it spasming into the dirt where it flopped and shuddered before succumbing to death. The mercenaries were making easy work of the odd frog species, but the barkeep and his townsmen were not so lucky. A gang of huge female frogs ran through the group, snatching them up with ease. The untrained humans were no match for the creatures, and could do little more than scream and flail as they were carried away into the darkness of the swamp, presumably to be fucked to death by the grotesque monsters. "Stop! Unhand my men! They belong to me!" the sweaty fat man screamed, trotting after the female frog beasts before thinking better of leaving the relative safety of the firelight. Exasperated, he stood with hands on hips, breathing heavily as the screams of his men slowly faded. "I suggest you take out that dagger you have so poorly hidden in your robes and join the fight, lest you have no men left when this is over," Trina said, wiping the frog guts from her ample bosom. The barkeep turned. "If it wasn't for you God's damned barbarians, I wouldn't be in this!" Before the squat man could finish his thought, a huge female frog thing bounded from out of the swamp and whipped her tongue around his head, yanking him into her mouth before he had time to so much as yelp. Trina laughed, pointing at the barkeep's flailing legs in the female's mouth. "That shut him up," she said to Nirod, who was in the process of bashing the heads of two frog things off a third. That was right about the time the female frog thing's head exploded. Blue flames and acrid smoke erupted from where her head had previously been. As her body crashed to the ground and the smoke cleared, it was not the sweaty barkeep who stood unscathed from both the blast and the maw of the frog thing. It was Kalir, the evil wizard. "Enough games! There won't be a single slave left to sell by the time you stinking lot are through killing each other!" Jorak brained the frog thing he'd been fighting and grabbed the severed head at his side. Lifting it up for a closer look, the barbarian cursed,
"Trickery!"
The head did not belong to the wizard Kalir after all. It was the sweaty, red-faced barkeep's dead visage staring Jorak in the face. In contrast, the real Kalir was thin and tall. His spindly arms and bony elbows resembled the limbs of insects more than normal human appendages, and the trim of his black robes roiled and billowed as if they were made of the sea itself. His tall, black hair and pointed beard gave him the appearance of some crazed demon straight from a hell's pit. But his most striking feature was his fiery red eyes. They blazed with an anger and hatred that chilled even Jorak to his core.
A simple swap spell, foolish barbarian! Did you really think felling the mighty Kalir would be as easy as taking my head? I let you lead me through these wretched Ick swamps because I have a deal in place with a slaver in the Fire Kingdom. I planned to take your head and cock once safely inside the gates of Oob, then make my fortune from the slaver before murdering that bothersome king of theirs. But you've ruined all of that with your god's damned heroics! Now the slaves are scattered, fucked or dead, and I, the great trickster Kalir, am left wanting, waiting, and nearly dead. A state which I assure you does not become me.
Before Jorak or his mercenaries could react, Kalir brandished a staff made of the bones of Yik, which are known for their magical conductivity, from under his robes and cast a powerful spell onto the fire pit at the center of the frog thing encampment. The drummers shrieked as a whirlpool of flames spun around, pulling, melting, and transforming their flesh and their drums into six nightmarish, living, wailing tendrils that jutted up from the base of the flames. The flames, which now brandished a fire head, complete with boiling white eyes and a sinister grin full of jutting, pointed, white-hot coals for teeth. The screaming tendrils whipped forth and wound around Jorek, Trina, and Nirod, lifting them effortlessly into the air, squeezing them so hard their weapons clanked onto the ground as they cried out in agony.
"I'll make a deal with you, frogling," Kalir said, casually strolling over to where the frog chief stood, shocked at the bizarre turn of events. "I'll sell you the remainder of my slaves, at a fair price, of course, considering you've already run off with most of them."
We do not keep material wealth. The Rig believe in harmony with nature. We are a simple..."
Before the chief could finish, Kalir rolled his eyes and flicked his fingers toward the frog thing.
"Die!"
With that, the frog chief's head violently ripped from his shoulders, apparently of its own volition. His eyes bulged and he made a sickening yerk noise as his head tossed itself onto the ground in front of his body.
"Shame!"
Kalir said, turning his attention toward the struggling mercenaries still flailing in the air before him. "And here I was hoping to save myself a trip to that wretched fire city. I suppose I could always sell you lot. The slavers are always looking for new gladiators for their tar pits." Kalir's words trailed off as his blazing eyes fell on the shimmering, vibrating moonblade laying under Jorek's kicking and screaming body, still held fast by the screeching tendrils made of frog things and drums.
What is this?"
Kalir moved apprehensively forward, as though if he approached the magical sword too quickly, it would disappear.
"A blade made of... could it be? An entire weapon forged of moon metal? I've never seen its equal."
"Do not touch my sword,"
Jorek shouted, struggling in vain against the enchanted tendril holding him.
"It was my father's, and his father's before him. You are not worthy of its power."
"Power, indeed,"
Kalir said, crouching before the blade. He was speaking to himself more than Jorek. He seemed completely entranced by its vibration. The evil wizard slowly extended his long-fingered hand. He was only inches from touching the pale, glowing blade.
"By moonlight, it is the most beautiful thing I've ever..."
As soon as his fingers touched the metal, Kalir's whole body lit up. He stiffened as though run through by lightning. He tried to yank his hand away, but found that his fingers had not moved. They extended out to his hand like sticky string. The thin man shrieked as the rest of him was suddenly pulled toward the blade in long, thin strands. He tried to scramble away, but only succeeded in tearing the skin from his face and arms as he turned to run away. His body was like putty as more and more of him sloughed off and sped toward the blade. Soon he was nothing but screaming bones until those too turned rubbery and were consumed by the shimmering weapon. At once the spell holding the frog things and their drums together broke, sending Jorek and his friends crashing to the ground, drawing fresh protests from their aching, battle-exhausted bodies. It was Nirod who landed closest to Jorek's moonblade. He, too, would have been consumed by it had he not had the presence of mind to put his arms out and catch his fall. There he saw, mere inches from his eyes, the face of Kalir, the evil wizard, pounding against some invisible force inside the moonblade as it shined brightly from the consumption of the trickster's soul. There were other souls trapped inside the blade, too. Nirod saw the tortured faces of all the enemies Jorek had slain with his mighty weapon, but Nirod saw something else inside the blade as well. Just before its brightness faded and the faces disappeared, he saw something that made his blood run cold. Something that would keep him up nights for years to come. inside the Moonblade, alongside the other captive souls, he saw another face. He saw the face of Jorek himself, pounding the invisible barrier, fear in his eyes, silently screaming for help. And then the faces were gone, and the blade was just a blade again. "Damned wizards!" Jorek yelled, wiping the swampy mud off his loincloth and arms. "I hate wizards!" "What will we do about the Reg now that their leader is dead?" Trina asked, picking the severed head of the chief up off the ground. "A better question is how will we get paid for Kalir without his head?" Jorek said, growing somber at the thought of losing out on the Fire Kingdom's reward for the head of the wizard. "I think I can answer both of those questions," Aurelius said, exiting the sex tent arm in arm with the three Reg females he'd so recently been fucking. "Relna, Skelna, and Thelna here have been telling me all about their chief, Yelna. Apparently, he was a real crazy bastard. He was forcing the females to fuck the men to death. They would have been satisfied with one spawn per cycle to assure the continuation of their species, but Yelna was trying to build a Rig army large enough to conquer the world." As if to lend credence to that fact, the females that had run off with Kalir's slaves came walking up out of the shadows of the swamp alongside the slaves, the latter of which had smug grins on their faces.
"What's got them so happy?"
Nirad asked. "They've just had the best fucks of their lives, I'd guess," Trina said, smiling.
"That's fantastic," Jorek said sarcastically. "But how does this love story make us money?"
"Simple," Aurelius said, breaking free from his frog thing lovers. He knelt by Kalir's discarded robes and picked up his yik bone staff.
"He said the swamp spell was simple, did he not?"
Waving the staff over the severed head of Yelna, the Rig chief, Aurelius chanted a few words he knew from memory from his days as a prisoner in the magical dungeons of Hast. Slowly, the frog head morphed and squished and changed until it was a perfect replica of Kalir's sharply featured visage.
"This ought to fool the Oob King long enough for us to get paid and make our way back to the safety of the wild," Aurelius said, beaming with pride. "So you're not staying with your frog women after all?" Jorek asked.
"I think I've had my share of fucking for the time being, barbarian. My place is at your side. Who else among you is smart enough to keep your dumbass alive?"
"Now that," Jorek said, grabbing his blood brother by the shoulder, "is something to celebrate."
With that, the barbarian picked up the Moonblade from the ground and replaced it on his back.
"If we move now, we can reach Oob by dawn."
The barbarian turned to the large contingent of Kalir's former slaves and the Rig females.
"If you lot are coming, you'd better not slow us down with your constant fucking."
The nearest townsman waved off Jorek's offer.
"If it's all the same, barbarian, I think we'll stay here with the women. They've been very kind to us."
"Suit yourselves, you fucking perverts," Jorek said, mounting his vicar beast.
Aurelius, Trina, and Nirad did the same, riding off ahead of Jorek toward the Fire Kingdom of Oob.
"Farewell here, frogs and men. Fuck often and reproduce aplenty. I wish you long lives and glorious deaths. Oh, and by the way,"
Jorek motioned for the girls he'd started the day with. The fair-haired girl and her dark-haired companion had spent the entire battle cowering inside one of the sex tents, safe from harm. They broke free from the group of townsmen and Rig females without hesitation. Extending his hand, Jorek helped them up onto the back of his steed.
"We're still bringing the wenches with us!"
And we're back.
Yes, we are.
Hi, Jerry Daniels.
Hi, Coven Strange.
So that's the Swamp Phantoms of Ik.
Yes.
Turns out that goddamn wizard Kalir was faking the whole time.
Yep, fucker.
Too bad he's got, his eyes got bigger than his wits, and he grabbed a hold of that fucking Moonblade.
Yeah.
Sucked his soul right in.
Tends to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I set it up earlier. Trina had mentioned she was going to take it, and the narrator was like, "No, that wouldn't happen because anybody touches that blade." And you didn't think twice about it, did you?
I did, but I'm been working with you for a bit.
No, so. You saw that as a, you're like, it was, oh, when something's going to happen.
When there's a totally offhanded comment in the middle of the first act.
Listen.
I start to go,
Number one rule of H.P. Hitchcock.
H.P. Hitchcock.
Number one rule of Alfred Hitchcock is if you show the gun in the first act, it's got to go off in the third act. Mm-hmm. If you set something up like that, you got to pay off with it. I try to sneak these things in, though, so you'll just read right over them like they ain't no big deal. Kind of like what happens when Nirod lands in front of the sword and sees Jorax Owen's soul inside of the sword. What the fuck does that mean? What the fuck does that mean? That doesn't get answered.
No, it doesn't.
What do you think that means? Maybe I don't even know what that means.
Maybe he was just touching the soul. Or just touching it stole his soul is the way I interpret it.
Jorek?
Yeah.
So what is Jorek?
His soul was more special? Of the weapon for the sword.
Mm, we're getting somewhere. I will answer that question in Jorek's first novel, which deals with how he gets the sword from his father, called Jorek and the Mad King.
Ah,
that's when that'll be answered. So, all right, I hope you guys liked that.
Yeah. All right, back to con stuff. We're going back to con stuff.
Yeah,
we have more stuff to talk about.
We have a ton.
Which, by the way, hello to anybody listening to us from the con.
Yeah, we had a big bump this week. A lot of people have listened to the show, listened to other episodes of the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm glad that we got through to some people and some people, because some people seem genuinely excited. Mm-hmm. And I told you that before we went on the road, that a lot of those people would be like, oh, but Over the Road Trucker, and I listen to podcasts, fucking audiobooks and shit. And we got a few of those, so that was
awesome.
You know, one of the things I was touching on before we got off on our tangent about doors and shit was, I was talking about, what would have happened had we gone, no, your penis was neglected, unfortunately, as was mine.
Yeah.
It was not a good penis show. I've had many good penis shows, but that wasn't a good penis show. It happens.
Just brought it down a notch, didn't we?
You know, I've been talking about what would happen if we had gone out there and just ate dick. And I've had cons that sucked. Had nothing to do with online drama or anything like that. It's just some cons suck. Some cons are good, some cons are bad. And I see people get so fucking demoralized. In fact, one of those authors that was there this weekend in the book nook,
he did get demoralized.
Bailed on Saturday and didn't come back on Sunday. Now, maybe it was a scheduling thing. I don't know. I didn't ask him. I didn't talk, but... And again, I'm not trying to talk bad about anybody. If you guys are listening, you're bad motherfuckers for going out there and doing it and fucking keep going. Don't let this stuff demoralize you. But I didn't see a lot of sales flying off the table over there, did you?
Yeah, not really. I did see a few sales from the guy that was on the other side of the librarian. I've seen a couple of his books.
But he was like in the fucking perfect path. He was in the fucking stream of
traffic. And I give it to those guys. They did deal with Kane Hodder. Crowd block.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. A lot of those people, there was a big horror publisher, indie publisher, who has always been the sponsor of Horror Hound. They went out of business this year. And these authors who have enjoyed being able to sit up at their end cap and have 4, 5, 6, 10 authors all signing right at the front door of Horror Hound don't have that anymore. And so a few of them, not many, a few of them actually braved the show as independent authors. And again, you're bad motherfuckers for doing that. Because the majority of them stayed the fuck home, right? The majority of them said, well, they don't have the publisher. You're bad motherfuckers for doing it, but you gotta get up and you gotta fucking talk to people. You gotta hang out.
Yeah.
You gotta fucking be a personality. You know, a lot of people that buy books from us, they're not buying books from us because they have to have our books. They buy books from us because they think we're fucking bad dudes.
Yeah, I found a lot of people, especially this weekend, you just have to engage them.
Yeah.
They'll look right past you if, you know, because books aren't the first thing on their mind when they're there. They're there for weird DVDs, action figures, cool knickknack stuff and stuff.
Autographs.
Engage them. I don't know how many times that there wouldn't have been a sale that just either me or you engaged them just for a minute, got their attention, just said hi.
No, it wasn't you or me. Let's get it. Let's talk about that. It was you, motherfucker. You had your whole shtick put together, by about, what, hour three on Friday night? I'm still sitting there trying to figure out where my dick is in my pants. And you've already got this. Well, see, the first week we did this book on the podcast. Then we did this book. And you were fucking slinging books.
Just talking.
Here's the dynamic, gang, between me and Jeremy. Jeremy fucking sets everybody up, informs everybody what's at the table, what the books are about, the whole spiel, and I'm still talking to the last motherfucker.
Well, you're the closer.
Standing there.
Then I want
to I'm yakking. If you can't tell, I'm the yakker of the two of us. And by the time Jeremy's going, here, Kevin, sign it, and I have to, like, send the last sale off, because I'm still fucking, we're talking about, well, I actually thought Luke Cage was a much weaker version of Daredevil season 2. I gotta push them away. Oh, alright, see you later. Yeah. And I gotta sign more. Like, I felt bad because I was signing books for people I didn't even know were at the table. It was like this fucking assembly line of like, and then I tried to get to know him. Like, oh yeah, what's your? Oh, okay, yeah. And so I'm signing there, and I've got two, three, four books for them to sign every time because Jeremy's fucking loading them up, not letting anybody walk off with one fucking book. And so I'm like, all right, I'll sign this and that. And then I start to get to know him. Now, next thing I know, I'm fucking talking about, you know, oh yeah, my kids graduated high school last summer. Kevin, did you sign this? Oh, okay. See you guys later. On to the next thing. But yeah, I wanted to definitely publicly give you your props for that for working that booth this weekend, because you absolutely murdered that shit. I take a lot of people on the road, and I've been doing this for a long time. And I've been telling you this since the very first, I don't know if you remember the first con we did, but yeah. I kept being so surprised that you were, like, taking initiative and, like, thinking about the bigger picture of what we were there to do, as opposed to just wandering around drinking and fucking gallivanting, and the drinking and gallivanting, I'm as bad as anybody is with it, but having you at a con, I always tell people, it's like, you remember when Twisted first tried to leave Psychopathic Records, and they tried to leave with Tom Dubb as their manager, and they failed spectacularly? Did they fail because Twisted isn't a brand that could sell?
Obviously.
Or did they fail because the management was fucking awful?
I would have to go with the latter, because
they got George a decade later, and Twisted is arguably a bigger name, a bigger buzz right now than Insane Clown Posse is right now.
It's definitely the star that the people that were kind of surrounding the Psychopathic star are starting to become successful with and moving towards them rather than...
And without George, I don't think any of this would be happening. And he's behind the scenes, and you have to kind of know the whole situation. He doesn't put his face out there. He doesn't put his name at the top of the lights. He's just George, and he's fucking blowing these dudes up. And it's fucking awesome to watch. It's awesome to see what a talented group can do with the right management. And that's how I liken our relationship. I can do this all day long. I can write books, and I can go to shows, and I can do all this stuff. But without the right management, without the right people reining me in and making sure this shit gets done right, it happens the same way Twisted trying to leave it will fail spectacularly unless I have the right people behind the scenes involved.
We're there for a reason, but we can still do all that fun stuff. It never made any sense that you couldn't get people to do that. I mean, it's just bullshit. I mean,
it is.
Half the girls I said hi to were, I was hoping they're going to fuck that book, dude. You want to pull that dick out for me? I mean, I can't really say that I was, it was totally.
No,
you know,
here's the
humanitarian.
Here's the weird thing, gang. As the weekend went on, I first made the joke. I actually think the big Kevin Strangehead behind us looks more like you than me. By the end of the weekend, we realized everybody thought that was Jeremy. And Jeremy could have said he was Kevin Strange, and they would have believed him. Throughout the weekend, Jeremy morphed into Kevin Strange. And we also, like, I think I've talked about this on the air before, Sean Ferrari, our editor, he and I look so much alike that even some of his friends at his wedding were coming up and congratulating me on getting married because he and I look so much alike. If Jeremy and me and Sean all did a show together with that big-ass Kevin Strangehead behind us, and we asked somebody, who is that? They would have been like, I don't fucking know!
Oh, you got
it looks like all three!
I told you that we are Kevin Strange would be a fun way.
Yeah, people would we all dress the same, exactly the same, and we're all Kevin Strange at any given point.
If you can determine who the real Kevin Strange is, you get a real book.
Which is awesome, because we all play a part in this whole thing. I don't think the thing would happen without each one of us, all three of us.
Well, thank you, but like I said, I mean, being there for a purpose, you can still have as much fun as you really need.
Yeah, I mean, to the point that you even, like you were saying earlier, you fucking sat out on Saturday night because it was like, you know, you could do, you know, you get your fucking fill, man. You get your fill. And a lot of those people we take on the road, by fucking Sunday morning, they're like literally crawling to get to the table, to open the table up, because they've burnt themselves out Friday, Saturday. It's like, you don't have, pace yourself, man. We can do 10 more of these shows this year.
Yeah.
You don't need to fucking party like you're dying every night. There's plenty of parties. There's plenty of people to hang out with. Plenty of cool motherfuckers to talk to. But we've had shows before where I've left the show early because I was fucking wasted or tired or whatever the fuck. And
I thought that was going to happen.
Without having the, I did too. Without having the right people there, I've had people leave bags of money with almost $1,000 in it sitting on the top of the table. A money bag. A bank bag with almost $1,000 in it.
Screaming, take me.
Yeah, on top of the table. And we had to be like, oh my fucking God, and run downstairs from the hotel room and fucking grab our fucking money bag, because the people working the table with us were that fucking neglectful and that, like, just unaware of their surroundings or unaware that they had a task at hand to perform in addition to having fun. It's all fun. Every bit of that shit is fucking fun.
It's not that hard of a task.
And it's not that hard to figure it out. Another thing that that I wanted to give you props for was there were zero times throughout the entire weekend, literally zero times where I had to go, where's Jeremy? He left like an hour ago to go pee, to go smoke, and he's still gone. Never. I mean, you were doing those. You were saying, I'm going to go have a cigarette. And before I even realized you were gone, you were back.
It's a simple little loop. I wasn't walking very far.
Again, those are things that I take certain people I'll bring on the road, and they think that their obligations to the table are like 45 minutes out of an 8-hour day that they need to be there. And the rest of the time they're smoking or eating or going to the bathroom or whatever, or I just want to walk around for a minute, and that minute turns into an hour and 15 minutes. And that's okay and everything, except when you figure in that most, you know, for that period of time when we were traveling as the publishing house was paying for everybody's everything. So anybody we brought on the road with us was on the road for absolutely for free out of their pocket. They didn't pay for their pass. They didn't pay for the hotel. They didn't pay for the gas. That all came out of the money we made at the show. So it's counterintuitive to spend the whole show away from the table. Like, the more money you make at the table, the more shows we can do, the more we can take you out for free on the road.
Just doesn't make a lot of sense. So that you're there to do something. You can still have fun. We both got a good chance to walk around and look at everything.
Absolutely.
It wasn't like I was fiending for a cigarette or having to go to the bathroom a long time.
And anytime when I walk out of there, anything that holds me up is motherfuckers want to talk to me. And the more, you know, I try to stay at the table so motherfuckers will come over to the table and talk to me, because if I walk away, I'm 15 minutes into a fucking conversation because I haven't seen this motherfucker in a year and a half or 2 years or whatever. But I'm never just like, ooh, I'm gonna, you know. But again, I've done this for 10 years, so every fucking thing that could possibly be for sale, I've seen a million times.
Well, even if you looked at everything, I don't know why it takes more than an hour.
Yeah, right. Because we have some fans that like walk the show and then come hang out with us, and they're at the table fucking 45 minutes after the show starts.
Yeah, and and like getting autographs. I mean, you knew when they were in line for autograph because you wouldn't see them for a while, and
then here they come back. So the only question remains: how long until the Poser Patrol launches their con tour?
Like I said, a couple weeks ago,
they've had zero. They've had zero con tours since the last con we took them on. Zero.
In what, 3 boats? 4 boats, maybe?
Yeah, in what has it been, 4 years?
More or less.
But now that I'm back on the road, now that we're back on the road.
Like I said a couple weeks ago, put them right across from us. That'd be hilarious.
How long is it going to take?
I'd say next year. Next Cincinnati Horror Round weekend. Since it's towards the beginning.
They'll be right across from us, like they never left.
God, I hope.
Like they never left.
God, I hope.
Here's the thing, though. The difference between us, real motherfuckers, and the fucking poser patrol, fake-ass motherfuckers, is the moment they don't have a con that makes money, they'll quit again. That's all those motherfuckers would do, is cry that, like, we got a fucking car horn going on. I don't know if the show's picking it up, probably. Picking up the cat fucking scratching himself over there. But, you know, this would sound a lot better if we were doing it from my phone.
It's the Spawn track from Prodigy. Did you ever get the Spawn soundtrack?
Yeah, well, the Spawn soundtrack was
that Prodigy ass song. There's a fucking car alarm going on for 3.5 fucking minutes.
It's still going on. Ah, there we go. Back when we were on the road before, those motherfuckers would comment like, well, if that dude hadn't come up and spent $80, we wouldn't have broken even. It's like, dude, you don't break even at every fucking show. What you do is you hand out those flyers, you make fans. Even if you make 3 fans at the show, the next time those 3 fans are guaranteed to spend money on you if your fiction is true, right? Well, if your fiction is true, they will come back.
There's a lot of people that just weren't interested. I handed them a card and said, hey, you know, check out the podcast.
No, most people aren't interested, right?
Well, yeah, I was saying, but I handed them one of the cards. Check out the podcast if you like what it is. The books are on the back. The way to find the books. So, it's just about getting your name out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't go out there day one and become a success. You got to pay your dues. It's the reason that saying is what it is. Is because, yeah, you spend money to make money. And not all shows are profitable from a financial standpoint.
Like sucking dick either.
They're not profitable from a fucking financial standpoint. But if you get one. If you get one motherfucker that's going to buy everything you ever do for the rest of your career, it's worth the fact that you didn't make money at, you know, you didn't break even at that particular show because you made a fucking connection, an emotional connection with a motherfucker. How many of those motherfuckers did you meet that weekend that have a fucking emotional connection with me?
There's a few of us actually.
They look at me like fucking titties, man. They look at me like a big ass set of titties.
There's a few I was worried about. We won't get into
specifics.
That's
what I'm out there to do, like, man.
Kevin didn't leave with him, did he?
That's what it comes down to. That's why I'm out there. I'm out there to meet those motherfuckers. I'm out there to make that fucking connection. The whole reason I do this, the reason I call myself a real motherfucker instead of a fake motherfucker, is because I'm not out there trying to fucking win a popularity contest. I'm not out there trying to make a fucking fortune. I'm out there to make real fucking connections with real fucking human beings. And those people will be with me. They're on this fucking trip for the rest of the motherfucker. You know, my first fan, I've talked about this dude for years. His name's Adam. He was the first guy to buy Dream Reaper on DVD from my Hack Movies website through PayPal. He was my first sale ever of anything I ever tried to sell as an artist. He was my first sale in 2006. 11 years later, in 2017, that motherfucker got in on the pre-order of I Died in a Bed of Roses. He's bought everything I've ever done, and he's been riding this ride with me for 11 fucking years. Popularity comes and goes. Fucking money comes and goes. But a fan like that is fucking priceless. And the only people that can have fans like that are real motherfuckers. Fake ass fucking in it for the fucking for the popularity contest motherfuckers don't have fans like that. They don't bring people along the ride for 11 years.
And yeah, all those fans want your 16 bars.
I'm not gonna rap. I'm not gonna rap.
Media mogul. 3 forms of media. Media mogul. But yeah, I mean, it's a great time. I mean, if you've never been out to a horror convention and you happen to stumble across us, go out to one. They're a good time.
Fucking great time, man. I had so much fun. I needed it, dude. And I said that for years and years. Like, that's what those shows and those connections, those intense connections with people are what motivates me when I come home. To push aside all the shittiness of my... Because I've been living in abject poverty for fucking a decade. Ever since I started this shitty fucking... this shitty fucking path. But I knew that I was going to be. I knew I was going to live a life of poverty. But that I was going to have real, real fucking emotional, long-lasting connections with fans. If I did it true... If I was true to myself and true to my art. no matter what, no matter if I was spitting 16 bars, they'd be 16 of the truest bars you've ever heard in your life, Jeremy Daniels. You'd be like, God damn, that Kevin Strange can spit.
Spitting the truth.
That's all I would do. I would only spit the truth if I was, whatever artistic endeavor or whatever I'm into, I only...
Ladies and gentlemen, I am slowly working in to get those 16 bars.
Resurrecting the fucking Kevin Strange rap career. So, I don't remember where I was going with that, but... being poor. Oh, it allows me to push all the anxiety, all the stress, all the nonsense I deal with. I haven't talked about this, and I don't talk about it with anybody because it doesn't matter because it's just life. But the radiator on one of my cars blew up the day before the con, and I only just got that car back a couple days ago. And that shit like that happens all the time, and that can drive your creative drive down to nothing. You can just sit and you can sit and be depressed about everything you don't have, or you can get on the road and meet those motherfuckers that are, I mean, I can, it's cheesy when people say this, but it's true, and I think that you experienced that with at least one of those dudes over the weekend. Is I changed people's lives with this stuff, and maybe not exactly the fiction, but just the fact that I'm out here doing it and I'm doing it in a true way, it inspires people. And that's all I've ever asked for. Like, if I can just inspire a few people, if I can speak the truth, and I can just keep doing it, then I'll be happy. I don't need all the money in the fucking world.
I mean, especially when you're out there making connections, it even makes the things that, you know, would normally set you back. I mean, we were supposed to have interviews with a couple different groups, and they didn't go through, but it didn't seem to bother us. We were having a good time talking to just everyday normal people.
Bullshit ain't nothing, right? Yeah. If you let the bullshit bother you, then you're going to get drugged into the fucking quicksand. And that's what these fucking part-time fucking poser-ass Facebook wannabe writers don't understand, dude, is it's to crawl out of that, to crawl out of that digital world into the real world and really sit there like those dudes sat across from us and have to experience real defeat.
Yeah.
You have to be true. You have to be a true motherfucker to withstand that.
If those guys happen to be listening, because I know they did grab flyers, keep going. Go out there. Keep making the connections. Stand up. Talk to people. If they're not coming to your booth,
go to them.
Say, hey, come here. Hey, how you doing?
We're not saying act like us. We're not. You know, if your personality isn't like me and Jeremy, if you're not a couple of crazy barbarians that go out and party and listen to Iron Maiden and drink fucking... Jose Cuervo. What was it? Don Julio.
Don Julio.
You don't have to do that. but you have to put yourself out there.
You have to.
Whatever your personality is, you have to.
Everybody can say, hey, how you doing? I mean, that's how I started, I'd say, 500 conversations.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing today? You know, they would say that. How's your con going? Yeah. You know, and then they'd stop walking.
And they become interested. And most of them don't buy anything.
Yeah.
Okay. Most of them
I'd say
95%. 95% don't buy anything, but the 5% that do wiped us out.
Yeah.
We came home with almost nothing.
Yep.
What about that gay Jesus, bro?
Gay Jesus was flying off the shelf. I ended up messing with the guy dressing with Jesus outside on Saturday. I was like, man, you've been making me feel bad all weekend. I'm sitting there slinging gay Jesus erotica. You keep walking by, I'd keep checking, make sure you're not the real Jesus. You know? Like, oh shit, there is a real Jesus and that motherfucker's here. Motherfucker, I like pussy.
Put the gay Jesus away. Real Jesus is here. Put the gay Jesus away.
So excited. I got like there's so many kids and they kept wandering up to the booth.
Oh my god! Was this the most kids you've ever seen at a fucking con?
Definitely the most kids. And I mean, I'm glad people are bringing their kids, getting them into stuff they like. But pay attention to your kids when you're at a convention. We had a book with a dick on it, and it was like a beacon to everybody.
It was like a fucking lure to anyone under 10 years old. God, I hate that. That shit used to happen with hack movies too. Because I would have a fucking television set up and we'd be playing trailers. And the trailers would have titties and fake dicks and everything. And those little kids would run up and start trying to watch TV. I'd have to go over and turn the TV off.
Yeah.
So right before the fucking dick shot happened, like, get your fucking kids, man. Keep those motherfuckers on a leash or something. There was one guy that was wheeling his kid around like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
That's how everybody should be required to fucking pop their kid on a wheel.
Or just pay attention to them. I mean, there's plenty of other stuff. I mean, there's a guy right next to us that had Mario Brother wallets, stuff like that. Direct him that way. Yeah. Look at the table that your kids are going up to.
Right.
I mean, there's two big fucking scary guy is at a table selling crazy books, and you're bullshitting with your friends while your kids are going, "What's this? Oh, it's cotton candy." Yeah, you know what that's about.
You definitely know. Speaking of
cotton candy,
that's a great segue because that's next week's book.
Yes, it is.
We're going to start Barbarian Month. It's actually wandered into an extra week.
Yeah, it has.
An extra week, but that's okay. A
couple days into the next month.
No big deal. This is now, I don't know, crazy, furry gangbang month.
Gangbang month. April is gangbang month.
April is gangbang month!
Now, yeah.
Now, I want to go back, though. What was up with the Gay Jesus? There was like 15 copies of those, and we left with zero.
Because, you know, I'd say, you know, my little spiel was going into, you know, we got this book. These are the ones we did on the podcast. And, you know, we got the craziest stuff around. Because, you know, when you say you got crazy fiction, every single person was like, I mean, you could see it on their face. Well, I've read crazier. And then you point down to Gay Jesus Erotica and blow that wall right up. What did you just say? Our furry gangbangs. Furry gangbangs. Mrs. Claus getting gangbanged by the elves. We got every crazy aspect for you, but
lots of gangbang theme. The erotic section of the table seemed to do really well with that. You cleaned us out on the fucking on the erotic side of the table.
It's easier to sell. Sex sells, it's easier to sell. I mean, I even talked about, you know, computer face, which, you know, didn't sell as well, but it's a great story. I mean, it's about robots using people as batteries. That got a couple looks, but people never wanted to commit. Your short story collections, they seem to do well too.
I mean, yeah, all the toxic waste from my heart went pretty quiet, fast. I think we took 20 copies of that. And that fucking
Humans Under the Bed went fairly quick too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everything did. We left with almost nothing. We left with, what, a few copies of I Died in a Bed of Roses, a couple of fucking Christmas books, and
here and there copies. I mean, we were getting down to just one copy of a lot of the other stuff. Yeah. But we didn't bring any toxic waste from our heart. We got rid of those. A couple Texas Chainsaw bags.
Yeah, just a couple of those, but I think we brought 20 of those, too. Yeah, those were fucking snatched up pretty quick too. Yeah, we
barely had enough to cover the table by the end of it.
Yeah, we were fucking like really reaching to have anything on that table by the end of the weekend.
A lot of spread out pamphlets or
flyers. A lot of flyers. All right. Well, I mean, we're good. We're 10 minutes over, so we will leave you guys, and next week we will get into Cotton Candy, the story of Mr. P. Story of an elderly gentleman who has recently lost his wife, and after the overcoming that tragedy, he awakens an erotic desire inside of himself.
He becomes Jeremy Daniels / Kevin Strange. We just weren't buried for 20 years in an innocent angel before.
he decides he needs to break that dick off in some shit, right?
Yes.
All right, so we will get back to you guys next week with part one of Cotton Candy. Until next week, gang, keep
reading.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.